Go ahead and get started. Tonight we'll be talking about Daniel. The good thing about Daniel is there's a lot of things to look at. The bad thing is you can't cover everything. So we're going to look mainly at the events that happened in his life and how they shaped him. We're not going to be looking much at his visions and his dreams a whole lot. So all right. So first of all, just a little background. Daniel, the name Daniel means God is my judge. And I think Daniel pretty much lived up to his name. He lived his life knowing that God was judging him, and he knew what God wanted him to do. And I don't remember anywhere in Daniel talking about him doing wrong, or I'm sure he did at times, but there's not a mention like we see about like we talked about Josiah earlier, about how at the end of his life he did wrong. I don't see that in Daniel. So, a little background. Jehoiakim is the king of Judah at the time that Nebuchadnezzar besieges Jerusalem. And we're going to go ahead and start off there. I'm going to have Luke read Daniel. So open up your books to Daniel. First chapter, verses 1 through 7.
In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with some of the vessels of the house of God. And he brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he placed the vessels in the treasury of his God. Then the king commanded Ashpenaz, his chief eunuch, to bring some of the people of Israel, both of the royal family and of the nobility, youths without blemish, of good appearance, and skillful in all wisdom, endowed with knowledge, understanding, learning, and competent to stand in the king's palace, and to teach them the literature and the language of the Chaldeans. The king assigned them a daily portion of the food that the king ate, and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. Among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah of the tribe of Judah. And the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego.
Okay. So first off, there was these qualifications that he wanted, that the king wanted, of the young men he would take. What were those qualifications? Anybody?
Without physical defect, handsome, smart, so they could learn the languages and literature of the Babylonians.
Right. And, you know, why do you think he would want that? Why wouldn't he just want somebody he could order around within his kingdom? He, of course, he's the king, so why do you think he wanted all these qualifications? Right, and exactly, he could use it to his advantage too, where he wasn't intimidated since he's the ruler, and as we see later, he does use Daniel to his advantage when he has him interpret his dream. So this was a benefit to him if he had the best of the best. So we see the four from the sons of Judah were selected into the kingdom. So now we see that they are all in the king's service, and Nebuchadnezzar has this troubling dream. We're going to go ahead and have Luke read. By the way, Luke, I didn't hear. Can anybody hear Luke reading before? Okay. Maybe it's just me. I can't hear. Okay. Luke, if you could read, pick up in chapter 1, Daniel, verses 17 through 21.
As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus.
Okay, so again, why do you think the king would interview them at the end of their training? Just, go ahead, Casey.
To see if they had the knowledge and understanding that he hoped for. I mean, just because you're smart doesn't mean you have knowledge.
Right.
And they excelled at everything they did. Of course, God was behind them, but it shows Nebuchadnezzar's wisdom too, wanting these people around him. Just like a president wants a cabinet, he wants smart people around him.
Right. I kind of thought the same way, that used to his advantage. It's going to only make him better to have better people around him. So what do you think he felt when he found that they were like 10 times, had 10 times more wisdom than his own people, his own magicians and astrologers? Well, I think that's kind of ironic, because usually when you're a ruler and you overtake another country or another people, they think they're inferior to them. So it seems to me it would have been surprising to Nebuchadnezzar. I don't know, anybody have thoughts about that? Just my opinion. I don't know if that's right or not.
Part of it too is to squelch any rebellion that might show up, because you're pulling all the young leadership that might grow to be in a position to, maybe not to challenge, but to just cause trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So they pull them all and take them to Babylon so he can have them close and have them controlled, and maybe a certain aspect of brainwashing is involved if you're taking young people
right.
And then turning them into your people by through culture and influence and that sort of thing.
Right. And do you think he was surprised that they were smarter than his people?
I would imagine so, yeah. I mean, prejudice would make you assume that he would think less of them. But I do wonder if, when that happens, if there was any sort of intimidation or kind of a moment to be of concern. I don't know if...
Yeah, you have to wonder what he was thinking. I just thought it was interesting that they would mention that
mm-hmm.
he found that they were so much smarter than his people. Good comments. All right. So, we don't know really if he was intimidated by their wisdom or understanding, but yet we know that he could use that understanding to his advantage. Okay, so now we set the stage for the troubling dream that Nebuchadnezzar has. And we're going to pick up in the second chapter, and Luke, I'll have you read verses 1 through 5.
In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. And the king said to them, "I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream." Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, "O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show the interpretation." The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "The word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins."
Okay, so we have kind of two sides here. We have a disconnect between the king and his magicians and astrologers. So, I kind of see the points on both sides, but somebody kind of give me an idea of why there is a problem between the two. I mean, we know there's a problem, but why? What are the two sides thinking?
God's not with his sorcerers, so they aren't able to know what the dream is. they know they didn't know it.
Right, they understand. Their point of view is, how, if you don't tell us the dream, how are we going to interpret it for you? And then what is the king thinking on his side?
Tell me the dream.
I'm sorry?
Tell me the dream and the interpretation.
Right. He's saying, hey, I've got you guys here. You should be able to tell me everything. Why should I have to lay it out for you? So you kind of see both points of view there. And the king is the one in charge, so they're the ones that are, have the problem, magicians and astrologers. So the king calls for the destruction of the wise man because they can't interpret his dream. And Daniel finds out from the captain about this situation, and he asks for an explanation. So this sets the stage for what Daniel does next. So Luke, going to have you read, picking back up in verses chapter 2, 16 through 19.
And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time, that he might show the interpretation to the king. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven.
Okay, so first of all, what does Daniel do differently than the other astrologers and magicians? Besides, we know that he consults with God and they don't, but what about when they approach the king, when Daniel approaches the king, what does he do differently than Nebuchadnezzar's magicians and astrologers? Casey?
He asked for a little bit of time, but I also think it's interesting that why wasn't Daniel there to begin with? And it kind of leads me to think that there might be a little bit of a pecking order within who gets to stand before the king and tell him these dreams, and the locals who are, the consultants there, they want to do it, and they're probably, I'm assuming they've kind of pushed Daniel and his people to the back, and as he finds out what's going on, he's able to, as it says, he used discretion to get to the king.
Right. So, that's a good point, that he knew that Daniel was much more knowledgeable than his people. It stated that earlier, but yet he picked his people first, which kind of a prejudice there, I think, like you were talking about. So then Daniel also, he didn't come out and say, tell me the dream. And like you said, he said, I want time. If the king was approached giving time without asking, if he would have asked for the tell me your dream and then I'll interpret it, what do you think would have happened? But probably the same thing that happened with the other magicians and astrologers. So, as you said, he used discretion. He knew how to approach the king. The king gave him the time needed. So then after that, he shares the news with Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. It's funny, I always know them by Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And we know Daniel usually by his given name or his birth name. So, but I think it's just because of the situation that happens to them later. So how does he approach them? I thought it was interesting. We don't know exactly what was said, but we know part of what was said. We don't know everything that he said to them. But what do you think of his approach to them and what they needed to do?
Daniel's approach to the king and say, hey, give me a moment. And then he sat down with his companions and realizing that they were in this together, so they knew their reliance upon God. God would give them an answer, but they had to go and request it of God. God wasn't going to just say, here it is.
Right. And I feel a certain calmness with what he did, too. He went to the king, did what he needed to do there. He comes back to them. He states, like you said, we have to have God and all of them together. He could have come back and just said, we're in deep trouble. This is what's going to happen to us if we don't do something about it. But he seemed to have a calmness about him to me, that he went to them and said, if we all pull together, God may have mercy upon us and give us the answer that we need.
I think that's an example for us to realize that oftentimes we may request God individually, but the power of prayer for multiples is warranted.
Yeah, I agree totally there. That's just a great example for us when we're in. A lot of times we depend upon ourselves too. We don't want others to know. I don't know, it could be a reason of pride, just not wanting people to know your situation. But with him, I mean, they were all in the same boat together. And a lot of times that can happen with us too. We have the same situation. And a lot of times as a congregation, we'll have that and we'll pray for others. And I definitely believe in the power of prayer and when multiple people go to God. Thanks. All right. Next slide. Let me just bring this all up. Okay. So the situation happens that God has revealed the secrets to them. He goes to Nebuchadnezzar, tells him about the dream, and definitely what's the main thing that he tells the king about the dream, as far as not necessarily the context of the dream, but why does he know about the dream again? Why can't he tell Nebuchadnezzar about that dream?
He attributes it to God rather than man.
Right. Exactly, and he makes that point clear each time that he's discussing. Very good. States it was revealed by God, and then we're going to pick up next in, make sure I'm right here. Yes, chapter 2, 46 through 49. Luke.
Then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, "Truly your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries, for you have been able to reveal this mystery." Then the king gave Daniel high honors and many great gifts and made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and chief prefect over all the wise men of Babylon. Daniel made a request of the king, and he appointed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel remained at the king's court.
Okay, so the first thing Nebuchadnezzar does is seems to have a change of heart. He acknowledges God. He said, "Your God is the God of God." And what else did he do before he said that? What did he do to Daniel after Daniel told him? Kind of a change of, I guess, his pride. My version says he laid prostrate before Daniel. So he was just humbled, which seems weird for Nebuchadnezzar, but at that time he was humbled, and he acknowledged, "Your God is the God of gods." And I believe he really did understand that the dream was interpreted by God at that time, it seems to be. So then Daniel is promoted, but yet, so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and why do you think he talked to the king about them? Mainly just because they were all together in this, as they went to God all together, and they should be. I think Daniel petitioned the king also so that he would know that they were also involved and that they all went to God together, not just him. Okay. Here. So next, we're not going to actually read the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, but does anybody want to just give me a kind of a summary of what happens with them? Go ahead, Casey.
So Nebuchadnezzar, a little bit later, for some reason that just baffles me, Bill had this large image constructed. He instructed all the people to bow down at the sound of this music. You know, everybody did except for these people. And so there was a little controversy, and so those three got arrested, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They got put into the fiery furnace, which is what was supposed to happen to anybody who did not bow down. And why are there four people in there? I thought I put three in. So they came out.
Yes, good summary. So, why do you think it kind of baffles me that I don't know how much time happened between Daniel's dream and this situation, but he basically totally forgot what he said about God, and it was all about him again. The pride returned. And then the situation where, when he found out about the three of them not worshiping, he gives him the second chance. So he has him come back and he goes, if you go ahead and worship me, fine. If not, there's the furnace. And do you remember what happened with him at that time when they made their statement that they would follow God and God would save them? If not, they wouldn't, but if so, he would. But they were going to follow God regardless. Do you remember his response at that time? Right.
Against people he liked and just a couple chapters
before. Yeah, he just became enraged when they would not follow or worship him. And he knew they were involved with Daniel before. You'd think he would understand that these were the ones that helped interpret his dream. He'd totally forgotten about all that. Good point. And then another point I wanted to bring up about that situation. You think about the four of them and what bond that they must have had. They started out as young men being carried off to Babylon. They were the only four in the king's service that relied upon God, and they were all put in life and death situations. To me, that would create such a great bond. Anybody have any comments about that? All right. All right, so now we're going to go to the lion's den. Turn over to chapter 6. So just to set the stage for the lion's den, Daniel now has become... He's over other governors and satraps, and they don't like it. So they want to find fault with him to get him out of leadership. Basically, I would assume they were jealous of him being over them. But they couldn't find any fault with him. So they knew the only way they could get Daniel was if it had to be concerning the law of God. So basically, now Darius is in control. He's the king now. I believe they kind of tricked Darius, although Darius may not have been thinking at the time, just based upon what we find out about his relationship with Daniel. So basically, they go to King Darius and have him sign a decree that the people can only petition him for the next 30 days. No god or gods could be petitioned, only the king. And I guess it sounded good to the king, so he went ahead and signed that decree. So now we set the stage for what Daniel does. So I'm going to have Luke read Daniel 6, verses 10 through 23.
When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open toward Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. Then they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction, O king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, The thing stands fast, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. Then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel. And he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, Know, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or ordinance that the king establishes can be changed. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. Then at break of day, the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions. As he came near to the den where Daniel was, he cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm. Then the king was exceedingly glad and commanded that Daniel be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no kind of harm was found on him, because he had trusted in his God.
Okay. So, I find it interesting. The first thing is, when Daniel found out about the decree, what was the first thing he did? I'm sorry?
Same thing you've done every day, when you pray.
Exactly. I like the way it states, as was his custom. So he wasn't going to let anything, this written decree, keep him from what he did every day, prayed to God. And they knew that. That's how they knew they would get him in, you know, this situation. So, afterwards, Darius finds out. Now, what is his reaction when he finds out that Daniel is the one that didn't hold to this decree?
He's upset because he valued him.
Yeah. I kind of feel their relationship. Kind of contrast his relationship with Darius with Nebuchadnezzar. What would be a main difference between that relationship just from what we've read? I think Nebuchadnezzar basically used Daniel to get what he wanted as far as his dream being interpreted. Yes, he did. He did go ahead and acknowledge God, and he did another time too when the situation happened to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He acknowledged God then too, but it seemed like he would use Daniel in that situation just to get what he wanted. It seems to me that Darius really cared about Daniel. He was distraught when he found out, just like you said. So to me, that's a totally different situation.
And because of his reaction, I think he realized he was used.
Right. I'm sure the men, they did basically use him, and he kind of got caught there, it seems like to me. I think if he would have known beforehand they were doing this for Daniel, he would have never signed the decree. Good point. So what else did Darius say about, what else did he say to Daniel when he found out, when he had to put Daniel in the lion's den? He said, your God will save you. So he did kind of spend a sleepless night, but yet he told Daniel, your God will save you. And that's exactly what happened. Any more thoughts on the lion's den? Go ahead, Tim.
There's nothing in like the old law that says you have to pray these certain times a day or on your knees or have your window open or anything like that. So Daniel could have easily continued worshiping God and praying just in not such an obvious way and giving them no evidence to use against him. So it's interesting that he just goes right ahead, not even slow down, doesn't be more discreet about it or anything.
Yeah, I like the phrase, as was his custom. So he did not, and that's kind of an interesting point you make, because do we sometimes, when we're faced with adversity or something, maybe do something different? Or, you know, I don't know, when we're faced with a situation, maybe we don't proclaim God like Daniel would in that situation. I know maybe me, I'm for fear of, you know, I don't know about retaliation or anything, but for fear of what somebody else might think. Daniel didn't care, right? He did what he did, which shows great conviction on his part. Good point. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and read this, since we got a little time, about the Darius, his prayer, or his, where he honors God, I'm sorry, from verses 24 through 28, I'm going to go ahead and read in the sixth chapter. And the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Then King Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So again, like you were saying before, he'd been duped by these people, and they received the consequences for what they did. And I find it interesting that usually, you know, people, when you plot like that, you're not always, people get away with stuff like that, but a lot of times, you know, people face consequences when they plot before God. Now, maybe they didn't think they were plotting against God. They just wanted to remove Daniel from his position. But when you do something like that, you pay the price. They paid the price in this situation. I think a lot of times in our lives, sometimes we think that people get away with things, and we don't understand why. But I think we have to understand that maybe not in this life, but in the life to come, there will be a judgment for anybody that does plots against God or is very deceitful in the way that they were there. So I think we need to have feelings of knowing that, and not worrying what, we're not the ones that worry about the retaliation. God is the one that will judge in the end. I think that's what we always need to focus upon. All right. So, as we've kind of discussed with the rest during this session, Can anybody think of any parallels between Jesus and Jesus' life and Daniel's life? Anything that you see similarities in what they went through? Go ahead, Jordan.
Something to Daniel, and when Jesus is praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, you know, angels come and minister to him.
Right, and they both, it wasn't ever for show. Daniel went into his room. Now, he didn't open it on his windows so everybody could hear him. That was just his custom to pray to God. And Jesus went to the garden. Jesus would go up on a mountain and pray. So they didn't ever do it for show. It was all genuine to God, and their benefits were, we see the benefits of each praying. Anybody else?
They both were accused of things because of jealousy, and then it was brought up to some other leaders who was actually reluctant to punish them, Pilate and Herodias.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, both plots to get rid of them, each of them, good point.
Hey, Darren. To me, I kind of see some similarities in Daniel going down into the lion's den and coming back out by the power of God. And to me, that looks pretty similar to Jesus going down into the tomb and coming out. And even more to that is what the king says in verses 26 and 27, because he's describing the works of God, but he describes them in such a way that kind of reminds me of what Jesus did during his ministry. And then he talks about his kingdom shall never be destroyed, his dominion shall be to the end. So to me, it kind of sounds like, you know, maybe a little foreshadowing of what Jesus will do, and then maybe even a foreshadowing of the church, his kingdom, which there will be no end.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I didn't think about him going down in the lines and coming up again, but that's exactly true. Good parallel. And then lastly, I just thought about, do we have the conviction of Daniel to do what is right in the face of adversity? You know, I wish I could say, I've never faced any adversity such as Daniel has. And unfortunately, I've fallen short for just little bits of adversity. So I think it's a great lesson for us to gain strength from Daniel just because of what he faced and what he did. And I don't recall anywhere seeing that Daniel did something wrong within the book of Daniel, as far as in God's word, discussing Daniel should have done this, but he did this. So we have a great example in Daniel. Thanks for your time, everybody.